Let's get this thing going. It may be episode 307. I'm as happy to be here as if it was episode number 7. If it was number 7 instead of 307, I'm just as excited to be here. I appreciate y'all tuning in. I know most of y'all repeat listeners, and I think that's something to be proud of that is worth coming back to. If you are new, hey, give the whole thing a listen. You know, it might get better. You might start off like in the first 10 minutes and be, this show sucks. Stick with it because you don't know. Might get better. We do have a Christian-specific segment. That's roughly the halfway point of the show. That may not be your usual thing. I encourage you, though, to give it one shot. At least just one shot. See, what's it going to hurt? It's 30 minutes of your life. If you say it sucks, you could, you lost 30 minutes. You waste 30 minutes doing all kinds of other frivolous things. Give it at least one chance. But if it is just going like the demons in you or whatever, just start ripping at you like, no, I can't hear that. Then, hey, I warned you and your demons. So you just not do that and whatever, go to hell. I don't care, but it is there. And I'll let you know when we're getting into it. So you and your demons can be all cozy, not be offended. Not be offended. You can go around and be demon possessed. I don't give a shit. You can go on and do that and run away. But if not, give it a listen. You might be surprised and get something out of it. And it's not going to be, I can tell you this, it's not going to be like watching some TV evangelist or some TV preacher with his nonsense. It's not. It'll be fun. It'll be informative. Give you insight. If I do say so myself, if you do get something out of the show, don't be shy. Pay those tithes. It's easy to do. Easy to do. We've got the snail mail address right here on the description page for the show at Radio Albion. That's what we got. And as such, we'll get into listener supporter mailbag. Because I have a question here. Got an email. An email here as we go through. Grandpa Dan, I'm a recent convert to Catholicism, and I'm finding it a great solace in my personal life, and your shows help me to understand the Bible more and more through the Christian-specific segment, and I want to thank you for that and everything you do at Radio Albion. I have been a longtime listener to you, Dr. Johnson, and of course Sven, since the days of Radio Arian way back in the 2010s. My question would be, as a relative newcomer to becoming a practicing Christian, how can I deepen my connection with God and Jesus Christ in my daily life? I'll stop here to say we'll answer this in the Christian-specific segment, okay? I'm not doing that right now, but we will come back to that in the Christian-specific segment because I think that's a really good question. Anyway, I'll finish this out. But for all the countless hours of content, I do wish to give something back. However, I am clueless when it comes to things like crypto, but would still like to pay tithes. Is there an easier way to do that? If you read this on the show, thank you in advance for your advice and continued work. You help a lot of people, and I'm one of them. May God bless you. And that's from Alex. And I thank you. I'm always humbled when I hear something like this. And I wanted to do this one first because I don't get into, I always just kind of blow past. We've got the snail mail address and all of that. The crypto, I have to say this again, because I read through that and I'm like, crypto, what do you want? What you want about? The Bitcoin, the crypto addresses on the Radio Albion site, those are from Sven from before he went away. If you have put money in there, it's fine. I'm sure he will be able to access that at some point. But I don't have access to that. I don't have any of the passwords, keys. I don't get that. So if you send anything to that, I mean, it's fine. You didn't lose it. And again, I'm sure Sven will be able to access that at some point. But we don't do cryptocurrency here. This is it. Sven doesn't have access to that right now. He's still on parole. I don't have access to it. I don't do crypto. I quit crypto a year ago for various reasons, not the least of which is the rules concerning it here in the U.S. are so convoluted. And when you look into it, the IRS basically even says, well, we don't even know how we're going to enforce it, but we'll know it when we do. And the so-called experts in these fields, tax experts, they say, well, yeah, we don't know how they're going to enforce it, but as they do it, some precedent will be set and eventually we'll know. I don't know about you. I don't want to be the guinea pig for that shit. I don't. So I just quit. It's not worth the headache. It's not worth the hassle. What we have here is snail mail. You go here to, you're on this page because you're listening to this show. I know 90% of the people don't read the description. I don't either. I wouldn't blame you. When I write them, I figure nobody's going to read this anyway. But if you go past that description, you'll see I have a snail mail address. And man, I don't even know. If a person doesn't know how to fill out an envelope, yeah, I don't know what to tell you. You fill out the envelope and put it in the mail. For all its faults, the Postal Service is somewhat, still somewhat functions. And usually things get here. I got Mr. T up next, and Mr. T sends something every week. And I don't think we've ever had it not show up. It's sometimes late, but to show up. So that's it. You just address an envelope. Now, I will say, if you're in, and this was the advantage of people say, crypto doesn't serve any purpose. And it does. Bitcoin, particularly, because that's your mainstream one. But crypto does serve a practical function, and that is international payments. Because if you do cryptocurrency, like say you're in Britain or some, you're, you know, somewhere in the EU, whatever, Russia, it don't matter where the hell you are. You'd be in Saudi Arabia. If you have internet access and you could send certain amount of crypto, I could cash that crypto out into dollars. Don't send me your British pound sterling. You know, I appreciate, I know some of you have done that before, and that's fine. I appreciate it. Honestly, what I generally do is I forward that to Span. So it's because he can and he needs it. But if I take foreign currencies to the bank to exchange them, they take like 2/3 of it. So, I mean, I just not paying the bank. I'll send it to Sven and he can use it, you know, do him some good. So, but I've had several people tell me that in their countries overseas, you know, exchanging for dollars is a no big deal. They just go down, they just exchange it. It's not, they don't get raked over the coals like I do. So you'll have to get some U.S. dollars if you're in another country. That's the one hang up, and I apologize for that. It just is what it is. You know, and if you can't do it, you can't do it. You know, you get the show for free regardless. But, yeah, no, that's it. You can write your letter. You can put your note in the envelope. You know, take your dollars or whatever. You know, if you're in the U.S., and you just want to write a check, that's fine. The instructions are there. Just look. And it is very much appreciated. Yeah, I do. I read that and I'm just like, crypto, what? Yeah. And then I thought, you know, I haven't talked about that in a minute, so I need to. Yeah, those crypto addresses, I should take them off, but they're Sven's. You know, y'all know I've been house sitting for Sven in his absence here, and I've tried to not change like hardly anything from the site. Just like if you had a friend or relative that asked you to come watch their house while they were on vacation, well, you wouldn't start rearranging their furniture. You wouldn't, because you're just there temporarily house sitting for them. You wouldn't want them to come home and you remodeled the kitchen. You might think you did a great job, but they'd be like, what'd you do to my kitchen? Why remodeled it? Nobody liked that old color. It's like, no, I liked that color. What the hell did you do? You were just supposed to watch my house, not remodel my kitchen. I haven't changed hardly anything on the side, for better or for worse, because it's not mine. This is Sven's. I'm house sitting in his absence. So I've not taken those crypto addresses down, but I do understand that that can be confusing when you look at a show page and it says, we can accept cryptocurrency. And you're like, well, I guess that means GPD. No, it does not mean me. I don't know. I should put a note there. So I don't know. But anyway, there it is. And I do appreciate it. Put it in the snail mail. It's the ultimate privacy coin. As I said, Mr. T, no note here, but I did get you this week. Mr. T, as always, I do appreciate it. Grandpa Dan, thank you for holding together Radio Albion. Your insight is amazing. Here's something to help with expenses for Radio Albion in Christ. And that's from B&G in Spirit. And I appreciate it. I put just your initials to say your name. Because somebody may say, I know a couple with that name. My gosh, they could be evil supporters of the truth or something. You know me, y'all. I do everything I can to protect y'all's, to watch after and protect y'all's anonymity. I do. Like these notes y'all send me, you know, I basically a few days after the show, whatever. I mean, they go through a paper shredder, even the envelopes. You know, not that anybody's doing anything illegal here, but I just that sensitive to respecting and trying to watch after. I do my best watch after y'all's anonymity, but we're not doing nothing illegal here. I mean, people get overly paranoid about stuff, you know, like, look, we ain't no terrorist organization here. We just visiting. That's all we doing here. We just visiting. And finally, Triangle Whip got a card. If I remember right, and I may not be remembering, I may be thinking of somebody else, but I think it was Triangle Whip. Like last year, like you sent me like until you used up all your candy, I'm laughing because I think it's funny. You know, I'm not like poking fun at you or nothing. It's just like I'm laughing because like I remember somebody, and I'm pretty sure it was you, like used up your Christmas cards throughout the year, like April, and I'm still getting a Christmas card. Like I got these cards and I'm using them, and they were good cards. I just thought it was funny. Anyway, GPD, do you think many of these events happening could be staged with crisis actors? I've heard Sandy Hook was faked. You never know. And again, that's from Triangle Whip. Very good stuff. And that is segues us into continuing on, because I actually had something jotted down here along these lines. All these people are actors. And I ain't talking like Sandy Hook. There's a lot of information on that kind of stuff. You can go spend hours doing that. We ain't got time for all that. But you bring up an interesting point, because I was just thinking of something along this lines the other day, and I jotted it down here as a possible thing to talk about. Truth seeking in clown world is a balancing act. Because, you know, people that get like, when they first realize that they've been lied to, like about a lot of things, they will go completely like full pendulum swing the other way. And like literally everything in the world is a conspiracy. You know, air is a conspiracy. Who believes in water? That's just nuts. I mean, I'm being a little over the top with that, but you know what I'm talking about? Like they spiral off into everything's a conspiracy. Everything is a lie. You know, well, you don't want to do that. But at the same time, the more you realize how much they lie. I mean, they literally lie about everything. So you wind up taking any information and you're having to balance it. You know what I'm saying? You're having to balance it with the knowledge they lie to us, but you're trying to balance it within reason, if that makes any sense. You're looking at things critically. I'm going to get back to the topic at hand here. But you're balancing it critically with what information you can have, and a lot of times that's not very much. But you have to be willing to look at things. I'm going to use an extreme example of this. Flat Earth. Y'all, some of y'all chuckling here or whatever. But flat Earth. I'm not saying that the Earth is flat. And if you do believe that, don't be sending me a 3-page heated email explaining it to me. That, just hear me out. While I'm not necessarily on board with full, you know, flat Earthism, I will tell you this. There are things about the nature of our world that they are lying to us about. Absolutely. For instance, I have seen, and people have conducted, and you know, this is what I mean with you balance it with the, you know, with actual information, what limited information you have. Now, on the one hand, people will say the Earth is actually flat. Again, I'm using an extreme example. Bear with me here. On the one hand, you'll have people say the Earth is actually a flat disk. On the other hand, the establishment tells us the Earth is this ball, and they tell us it is. The circumference of it is this many miles, kilometers, whatever measurement. People have conducted actual experiments using GPS to be accurate and tracking things a certain distance away and applying the mathematical equations, the math of the alleged circumference of the Earth, and using the equations with the figures that the establishment gives us, the object should be invisible because it should be over the curvature when the object winds up still being visible. That's an experiment. That's verifiable fact. So, while it may not be necessary to go flat Earth here, what we do know from this is, at the very least, they're lying to us about the size of the Earth. You see what I'm saying? It's a balancing act. So get back on point. It is a balancing act. While I may not be ready to go full flat Earth here, I do know they're lying about the size of it at the very least. And if they're lying about that, what other nature, things of a nature of the world, the creation around us, are they lying to us about? Because when somebody can conduct an experiment and by the equations they say is the circumference of the Earth, and this object then that has been measured, this side, you're tracking it with GPS, and you know for a fact it is this many miles away, and with the mathematical equation, you shouldn't be able to see it. Well, you can. So something doesn't match up here, which means they're lying to us. You see. So, okay, reeling things back here. The balancing act. I got off on the balancing act. No, actors. You come to realize these people in the public eye, they're all actors playing a role. And sometimes they reveal themselves for who they are. You know, you were talking about, Whip here was talking about, you know, crisis actors and stuff, but I was thinking in terms of people who presented as a public persona. These are all these people are manufactured. You remember the whole QAnon thing? And there was one line, you know, you're watching a movie. And no, I'm not a QAnon guy. But sometimes you'll find a nugget of truth in anything. Just because if you sling enough stuff at the wall, you're liable to find some truth in there. You know, and remember there was that line, you're watching a movie, and people, it's just like everything else with Q, it's this cryptid, you know, this cryptic thing you're supposed to decipher, and people running around. It's like the, yeah, I don't know, it's like the secular version of the Book of Revelation or something. But anyway, but there is a negative truth there. These people you see in the public eye are manufactured. They're actors playing a role, and sometimes they deviate from the script, and when they do, it becomes obvious that they're playing a role. I think a really, really telling example of this is this latest kerfuffle over the past month or so with Elon Musk in the public eye. Now, we have been given this narrative that Elon Musk is perhaps autistic, super genius, but he's a super genius. That's why he's a billionaire. Because he invented these Tesla cars and everybody ran out and bought these Tesla cars. That's a lie, of course. He got all his money from carbon credits from the government. And we'll get into that here in just a sec. But long story short, he's this super genius, maybe a little socially autistic. But you know, what do you expect? Because he's a genius. He even named the car after Tesla, who really was a genius. So you make this subconscious connection. You remember what you've heard about Tesla, Nikola Tesla, the actual person, and he was a super genius. And this guy that they're narrating to us is a genius, and you associate him with that name Tesla. You see, your mind subconsciously makes a connection here. And it's a fraud. He's an actor. Because one of the things, and a lot of people, I don't know, they miss this. But like one of the things that became apparent over this whole, like his behavior, especially over the last month or so, is this guy's stupid. I'm just going to say it. They have presented this narrative and this guy's playing this role as, you know, like some real world was the guy Stark or whatever, you know, from the Iron Man Marvel comics. Again, they want you to make these connections in the back of your mind. This guy is some super genius billionaire. He's going to take us to Mars or some shit. And you just observe, like, what he says and whatnot. And you realize pretty soon, like, especially over the past month or so, this guy's an idiot. You know, he may not even be a midwit. He may be borderline retarded. The whole thing just falls apart. And you realize that the whole narrative they've given us about this guy You know, in my opinion, it's just that. It's bullshit. They created a narrative. You know, oh, this guy with his super genius. Really? How did he leverage his super genius to get the government to create the carbon credit program so that when he created this Tesla, he could sell all those carbon credits to Ford, GM, Mercedes, whoever the hell else, and get rich? How did he leverage his super genius to have all those connections in government to be able to do that? Well, he didn't. He's the front man. He's the front man. I've come. Anybody's in the public eye, you know, that the media talks about, they're actors. They're playing a role. When you see these people, if you start viewing them as manufactured personas, playing a role, they're pretending, they're acting, they're literally acting. The world is their stage. You're watching a movie. They're playing a role. They're actors out here playing a role. Who are they really? I don't know. Sometimes the mask slips, though. Like I say, I think with my take on the Elon Musk thing, people were going on about, you know, man, this guy, that. And I'm thinking, this guy's not very smart. I mean, I'm not a genius. I don't pretend to be a super genius. But I mean, yeah, I got enough sense that I wouldn't act like that in public and say, you know, I would have enough self-control. You see, if you present somebody, you know, as, oh, look, this is this billionaire person, and they created this huge company. See, people are more accepting than that as if you said BlackRock owns everything. And maybe not just BlackRock, but that's a big example that people are familiar with that name. I think these narratives are more about the ones that you don't know their name. You see what I'm saying? If you look at Amazon, you say, man, Amazon is this big thing. And you associate that with Jeff Bezos. You see, you got to have someone to associate that. And you say Amazon obviously is in control of a lot of stuff. And they're obviously making billions of dollars. And you associate that with this one guy. But if it was just this murky, we don't know where the money came from, where this place came from. I remember when Amazon first started, because I'm old. You know, it was an online bookstore. Remember that? Remember those ads where they were like at the Great Colosseum, you know, in Rome, and they're like, you know, more books than could fill the Colosseum. It was a bookstore, basically. Where did the seed money come from? Where did the promotion, where did all this come from? You see, they don't want you asking those questions, so they give you a public actor. They give you a persona to associate with, which came from Jeff Bezos. That's why he a billionaire. From nothing. It takes money to make money. How are you going to be a billionaire if you don't start off with billions to make millions? You see what I'm saying? This narrative we get that, you know, all this certain person started off with $5 in his pocket and today he's a billionaire. That, my friends, is what we call bullshit. It takes money to make money. That's a reality. With maybe a rare exception. And when somebody says, oh, that person started off with $5 and now he's super rich. If that were true, you would find that that's the exception, not the rule. And probably that's a lie too. They just have covered it up. Takes money to make money. But you see, they don't want you asking that question. So you just naturally say Jeff Bezos. He's a persona. He's the actor. Whether some people are given the role of hero, some people are given the role of villain. Do you think it's a coincidence that George Soros looks like, you know, Emperor Palpatine or whatever his name is from the Star Wars movies? You think it's a coincidence that this guy looks like a Hollywood villain from a Bond movie? No, he's playing a role. You see, he's the public face. Now, he's saying that he may not be, you know, evil. I'm not defending George Soros, but I'm saying he's playing the role of the face. People say, oh, that's from Georgia. You run into normies and they'll talk about it. But you know that's from George Soros, right? George Soros is funding all that. George Soros. Well, they don't mind if you're talking about it. That tells you they don't care if you're talking about George Soros. George Soros is fulfilling the role to make sure you're not asking who else. The ones that you don't know their name. Like I say, we're talking about BlackRock because that's an obvious, big, huge thing. And again, you're allowed to say BlackRock. But it must be virtually just because it probably goes deeper than that. They don't mind if you talk about this. There's some other stuff they don't want you talking about. If you see what I'm saying. George Soros playing a role. Now, again, I'm not saying that he ain't doing shady shit. But I'm saying he's playing a role of the public face. Klaus Schwab at the World Economic Forum. He's playing a role. Again, another person that obviously looks like a Bond movie villain. You know, like they're literally people are like, why do these people look like? Because they're cast for that role. They're actors. I'm not saying they have no role in it and they just simply, hear what I'm saying. They're put forward to be the public face. You talk about the World Economic Forum, they talk about Klaus Schwab. They don't want you asking, well, who else? who else? Once you're digging into that, you just take Klaus Schwab because he looks like a Bond villain. You know he's a bad guy. No one looks at Klaus Schwab and say, I think y'all being hard on Klaus. I mean, look at him. He's got such an honest face. He doesn't look like somebody that would be up to anything shady and nefarious. Look at the guy. Would you go leave your life savings with Klaus Schwab? Or George Soros. I mean, look how honest they look. No, they look like that for a reason. They're cast for the role. When you really realize how much stuff they present to us are lies and fakery, and you start kind of peeking under some of that. I don't know how deep it goes. I really don't. Because it gets real deep and real dark. Because I do know that there is a spiritual element to it. I'm not going to start preaching at you early, although we are fixing to get into the Christian specific segment. There is a spiritual element to that. And just as an example of that, they obsessively go through rituals, public rituals. You see these entertainment people and you know, they all doing the one eye thing and holding up the triangles as an example. Remember, because, you know, they've been going on about Jimmy Carter dying and they trying to recreate him into a role of some sort of Saint Carter when he was just a bumbling idiot playing a role. But they've recreated his persona posthumously to be a saint. And in all of this, they were showing some video clips of him, and they're showing his old man from several years ago. And it reminded me of this public ritual. And they were showing him sitting there talking about whatever, Habitat for Humanity, whatever. And he had a big black eye. This 80, 90-something year old. I guess he was already in his 90s then. He's 90-something years old with this black eye. And it reminded me, remember that? Remember when all at once, in the same time frame, all of these public officials, Chancellor of Germany, Mitch McConnell, all of a sudden these people at the same time were coming out in public talking and they all had black eyes. You remember that? And people were like, who's giving these people black eyes? Because it's not a coincidence. All at once, all of these prominent people who live this well-guarded, protected life, they're all coming out with black eyes. The answer is simple. That's a public ritual. I don't know the details of it, obviously. If I claimed to, I'd be lying. But that's a public ritual. When they all come out with black, I don't know what it entails or the purpose of it. Don't try to bog me down in that because I don't have the answer. But it doesn't change what's obviously, you know, readily apparent for anyone. Look at that. That's a public ritual. All these prominent people are coming out with a ritualistic black eye. That's a message. It's a public declaration. Again, when you realize the spiritual element and you understand that Satan, you know, he does everything as like a weird inversion of what God does, to make it short. Because like I said, I'm not trying to preach early, but you have to understand the spiritual element. Everything he does is this weird inversion. Well, as believers, you know, we publicly, as a sense, we proclaim our faith. You know, we give a testimony. We pronounce our faith in public, so as to speak. And you see the inversion of that, these rituals, I believe one of the roles they play when you see some latest singer that came out of nowhere and they're up there dancing around, all of them doing triangles and the one eye Illuminati, whatever you want to call it, imagery. That's their public testimony. See, it's that inversion. They're giving their public testimony that they have given their soul to Satan. They may not understand it as such, and I don't want to get off into that. But at the end of the day, yeah, they're all actors. They're playing a role. We got to keep rolling. We're going to play our role here of getting into the Christian specific segment. that didn't come out slick as I thought it would, but we are going to do that. So you know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon at the Parish of the Patriots. And as promised, we're returning to our question from the listener, which is, as a relative newcomer to becoming a practicing Christian, how can I deepen my connection with God and Jesus Christ in my daily life? This is a very good question, and one I think on some level or another, or at some point or another, every believer struggles with or has struggled with. So very good question. So we'll get into some of just a few practical things that I thought of as I just sat around and pondered this the other day. You know, practical things that you can do. What can you do? We talk about faith and we talk about, you know, things such as that. But what are some actual things you can do that you can undertake and over time see progress? We like to see results. We're all about results. We want to see results. We don't want to hear a bunch of touchy-feely stuff. We want to see things actually change. And what are some things, some real-world things we can do, we can undertake? Strategies, as it were. Now, the number one thing I would say that you need to deepen your connection with God and Christ, to grow, the number one thing is you've got to have some alone time. You've got to find a way to have some alone time. And, you know, to dedicate to God. If you could do that every day, great. If it's just once a week, whatever you've got to do. If it means you've got to get up early before everyone in the house gets up, so be it. If you've got to find a way to have some alone time. Because God's not going to shout over other people. I mean, it's fine that you sit there and consider the Lord on your drive to work, for example, but you can't do what you need to do. You've got to find a way to have some time, an hour or so, whatever you can set aside that you know you're not going to be interrupted. Somebody's not going to come banging on the door. Your phone is not going to ring. You're not going to have an interruption. So that you can clear your mind and set your heart on God. Now, people will say, that's you don't know what you're asking. That's very hard to do. But we have to consider, we're always wanting God to do all of these things for us. You know, we tend to get into that trap where we're wanting God to do all of these things. We want to see results. We want to see growth. But what effort are we putting in? What are we bringing to the table? Our faith is in our actions, in our deeds. It's easy to say, and I'm not saying this what the listeners do. I'm just talking in general here. We're having a general discussion. We can say, you know, oh, we want to, you know, have a connection. We want to get closer to God. We want to understand Him. But what effort are we putting in to do that? If we just say that and then go about our daily lives and expect Him somehow to wheedle His way in there, it's not going to happen. It's just not. God doesn't play second fiddle. You know, we had a discussion, I believe it was on last week's show, about money versus the Lord and not getting those, you know, relationships twisted up. Money should be your servant. Not the other way around. And on the flip side of that, God is never your servant. Never. You have to remember the hierarchy. always. So we want God, we want to see results, we want God to do these things and reveal himself in our lives, but yet setting some time aside for him, that's just too much to ask. You know, there's a saying, you know, you see, you hear people, if you were, for instance, coaching, a junior high football team, and you were coaching these kids and teaching them, you know, to play the football, and you know, one of the kids is discouraged and kind of quits putting effort in, you would tell them something, a common thing somebody would say in that situation is, you'll get out of this, you know, in other words, if this kid came and said, I'm just not getting anything out of this, a common comeback would be, you'll get out of it what you put into it. If you don't put anything into it, if you don't put any effort into it, you're not going to get anything out of it. You're going to get out of it what you're willing to put into it. You can apply that to our relationship with the Lord. We're going to get out of it what we put into it. If you're not willing to put anything into it, then you don't get anything out of it. And again, I'm just going to say this one more time. I'm not saying that about the listener who brought the question. I don't know anything about you. I took that as a launching point. We're just having a general discussion. I just want to say that again, but people be taking things personally. I didn't mean for you to attack me, D. Didn't mean for you to attack me, but I'm not attacking you. I mean, a general discussion. But no, seriously, so many times we want God to do all these things. We want to see these results. We say we want to grow, but we don't want to put any effort in. You get out of it what you're going to put into it. Number one, you got to find a way. If you can't do it every day, it's fine. I understand. Everybody's busy. Life is busy. You got to find a way to set time. Maybe it's not even on a regular schedule, but be looking for time when you can set aside, clear your mind. For me personally, it may be different for you. For me personally, mornings work better for the simple fact that I have found over the years that when I first wake up in the morning, my mind is the most clear. As the day wears on and I'm dealing with worldly BS and concerns of the world and trying to fix things and do things or whatever I need to do, those things tend to clutter my mind up and it's harder to clear out and focus on God. First thing in the morning is easier for me. Just like I say, it could be different for you, but for me, just that little pointer there. But yeah, you got to have this alone time. And I want to, I'll come back to that alone time here, and we'll get into why that is. The next thing I would say is you've got to read the Bible. It's daunting, but you got to do it. Now, there's different ways to go about it. And don't just try to get through the Bible. I always tell people, don't try to get through the Bible like, you know, there's an end goal, because there's, and what I mean is you're never going to finish it. Don't be in a hurry. You know, sometimes we read the Bible here on the show and I do like a chapter or a few verses. I would say the way I do it, again, I can tell you what works for me. You know, I read a chapter. I usually will not read more than a chapter at a time because I'm reading the Bible, and I believe this is the correct way. I'm reading the Bible looking for meaning, not looking to turn pages, to hurry up and get through it. When you understand that you're never going to finish going through it, and we'll circle back that too here in just a minute. You're never going to finish going through the Bible. You don't need to be in a hurry. You can read a chapter at a time. Now, my current Bible reading strategy, because I've done the from Genesis all the way through Revelation. I've done that. I've done flip through and pick random chapters out of random books of the Bible. I've done that method. My current method is from beginning towards the end while simultaneously from the end to back. In other words, I'm going through the Old Testament chapter at a time one day, in the next day in Revelation, starting with Revelation, going through that book. In other words, I'm simultaneously working Old Testament and New Testament. One day I'll read a chapter from whatever book I happen to be going through from front towards the middle of the Old Testament. The next day, I will go through whatever book I'm going through, or a chapter rather, from whatever book I'm going through in the New Testament. And I alternate old and new, because you've got to have the Old Testament. People, a lot of churches will tell you, you know, oh, well, the Old Testament's fine for history, but you don't need that. And you do. Absolutely do. Now, would I say you'll never finish going through it? What I mean is you'll finish going through it. I don't know how many times I've read the whole Bible. I don't know, because it's irrelevant. But I'm not done. How many times have I read through the Gospels? I could not tell you. And I can tell you still yet today, when I read through, I can find a different meaning in things. I see a different thing. And this ties into why it's important not to neglect the Old Testament, because you will often read things and you will remember something you read perhaps recently in the Old Testament. You'll see how these things tie together. You cannot neglect it. But you're never, you will always get something out of it. You look at it, and it's this thick book, and it is meant to be with you your whole life, if that makes sense. You're never going to run out of finding meaning in it. You might read a chapter or a verse, set of verses that you've read 1,000 times, and you can still find some new meaning in it. Now, again, I think it's important to be reading it with the idea of getting something out of it, not I'm trying to get through this, like, you know, it's a goal I've set. I'm going to get through the whole Bible. It's not what's important, because you're never going to finish getting through it. You might read all of it, but you're never going to be finished going through it. So you want to read. That's why, again, for me personally, I read about a chapter at a time, because I'm looking for meaning. I'm not looking for quantity. I'm looking for meaning. And it's easier to absorb it when you know, okay, I'm starting, you know, on Luke chapter 13 is what I'm reading today, for instance. You can go through that, you know, and you're not in a hurry, because you know once you hit 14, you're finished. So you can take your time and go through it. Usually, if you have your alone time, this is when you're going to do your Bible time. Now, I said I wanted to circle back to the alone time and the importance of the alone time. What are you doing? You know, are you spending that alone time in prayer? You're clearing your mind. You're setting your heart on God. That alone time, you know, your prayers. How do I put this? Your alone time / your prayer time. You need to spend it, I believe. You need to spend a lot more time listening than talking. You know, Jesus said, you know, don't babble on like the heathen do. You know, because they think with a bunch of words, they're going to get through to God. It's so easy to get sucked into that. I have in years past. You know, many people do. They'll start praying and 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 praying. And it's like, what are you trying to do? Like you've got to convince God. Don't babble on. Spend more time listening. This is where your Bible reading comes in. There's various ways. Clear your mind. Observe the world around you and just start thinking about these things. Think about things you're observing in the world. Evil. Decent things. You know, good things. Evil things. Think about the way the Lord is created. Look at the creation. God made this. It tells you something about the artist that created. If you looked at a work of art, you would look at it and try to understand the mindset of the artist that created it. Think about the world around you. Think about the Lord in this sense, and open your heart. And just start thinking, maybe speaking about that. If I'm perfectly alone, I'll sit here and speak out loud, you know, about the Lord and you know, observing the reality. This is where it's key, I think, to remember that Jesus said he was the way, the truth, and the life. I'm always focused on that truth. You might start off thinking about things that you might initially think, well, that has nothing to do with the Lord. But if it's centered on truth, it's related to Jesus Christ. If it's centered on truth. So as you're in your alone time and you're thinking, you're looking for things, you're settling your mind, you're clearing your mind of all this worldly distraction, and you start going through some things, observing the world around you, the creation around you, whatever. If you're focused on truth, it is related to Jesus. And you might think about some things, and then pretty soon you start realizing how that is related spiritually. The way I said that probably doesn't make a lot of sense, but it just kind of go for it. Keep your mind clear. Listen. Seek out God with your heart. Listen. And just keep making those steps. And I think you'll see results. I do. It has worked for me. This has been my approach. That's all I can do. I can just share with y'all the things that have worked for me, the things I observed, things that, you know, I've seen. And hope that has, you know, that helps y'all out. So again, find some alone time. That's the first thing you got to do. Yeah, that's how you're going to find that connection. You're not going to find that connection while doing a whole, you know, five other things. You've got to find a way to set that time aside. It's hard. I know it is. You know, it's hard to find time where people aren't around us and distracting us and wanting things from us and talking to us. But it's what you got to do. If the effort you put into it, it'll pay dividends. We're going to keep moving. I have something else I think we can get into today. And this too might help to understand. The meek shall inherit the earth. The meek shall inherit the earth. I thought we'd get off into that a little bit. It's funny how people confuse, they don't understand what the term meek means. It sounds like weak, doesn't it? So people seem to conflate the two. The weak shall inherit the earth. But that's not what it says. It says the meek shall inherit the earth. What does it mean to be meek? I would say a good definition, a good working definition, would be the opposite, to look at the opposite, you know, to flip it over. What would be the opposite of it? And you can kind of figure out the proper term. And I think the opposite of meek would be what? Prideful. Now, why should the meek inherit the earth? What's the difference, you know, between the meek and the prideful? Well, again, this is where Bible reading comes in. It ties in, and you recall other things that are written and how they apply here. We're instructed, one of the things we should do as we go through life is to seek wisdom and understanding, the value of wisdom and understanding. In Proverbs, over and over, it is emphasized the importance of seeking wisdom and understanding. But how do we do that? How do we know when we have grasped? How do you attain wisdom? Because if you're seeking wisdom and understanding, the inference here is that you're lacking that. Nobody seeks out what they already have. You have a case of oranges here. You're not going to go out looking for oranges. You already have oranges. If you seek out wisdom and understanding, the implication is that you are lacking this thing. Or perhaps you have some, but you want some more. You're looking to always accrue more wisdom and understanding. But yet, how do you seek it out if you don't realize that you lack it? Does that make any sense? A man who is full of pride, and I'm talking about sinful pride. We need to get into that. I don't want to get too sidetracked on pride and what that means. You know, there is sinful pride. You know, and you know, then there's a form. You know, if you just, wow, I finished this project. I'm so glad. You know, I'm proud that the Lord has blessed me with understanding, whatever. We're talking sinful pride, and maybe that will be a little better understood as a kind of a side effect of our discussion here. But in pride, a prideful person cannot ever accept the idea that they might be wrong about something. You run into people like that. And it doesn't matter how you show. You can show them on paper. You can show them the mathematical equation, break it down to where anybody could understand it. And they'll still be like, nah, man. They'll still try to argue with you. And they don't even have a counterpoint. You've so clearly explained it. You've shown them. You know, the evidence. You have shown them. Undeniable proof, whatever the topic is. And what? They still won't accept it. Why? Because they can't accept that they might be wrong about something. But how can you gain wisdom and understanding if you can't accept that you could be wrong about something? You see? It's going to block you. You seek wisdom and understanding. Where it's written that we should seek wisdom and understanding. But yet, to gain that, think of your knowledge. If we're talking about wisdom and understanding, think of your mind as a crate with a set amount of space in it. And your crate is full. Now, you want to have wisdom and understanding in your crate. But if you come upon a nugget of wisdom, a handful of understanding, and you wish to place it in the crate, there ain't no room for it. Something's got to come out of the crate. You got to take something. You've got to remove something out of the crate to have room to put the wisdom and understanding. Does that make sense? Because if you have a set view on something and you gain some wisdom and understanding, that means that what you previously thought you understood about that was incorrect. And you're going to have to be able to jettison that to make room for the new information. You see, the prideful man can't do that. The prideful man is always right about everything, and there's no way he's wrong. The prideful man will boast. I've seen people essentially, and in not so many words, I have seen people from time to time boast that basically, I haven't changed my view on anything in 30 years. That's a man who's ceased to learn. Because I don't care who you are. I don't care how smart you think you are. I don't care how learned you think you are. I don't care how much you think. You never finish seeking and gaining wisdom. You don't know it all. Somebody sit there and tell me, I ain't changed my view on anything in this whole world in 30 years. That's somebody who's quit learning for at least 30 years. They haven't gained anything. They think it's flex. Somebody will say that and think it's a flex. Like you're going to look at them and go, man, you must be smart. You've got all the answers. No, they don't. Because ain't nobody got all the answers. I don't. You don't. You never will. Not in this life. We have views on how the world works. On how the world works, when I mean the world, the creation, our relationship with God, all of these things we have. I mean, we may be aware that we're lacking some understanding in certain areas, but we will fill those blanks in, you know? Like, we think we understand every aspect of Jesus Christ. Well, we may understand that there's some things I don't quite get, but we kind of just fill those blanks in. We just kind of cover over those and figure it'll work out. At some point, you get new information. You come to understand. You got to go in, and again, your previous view that was incorrect because you have new information. If your previous view was not incorrect, then you didn't get any new information. Does that make sense? Because there's going to be a contradiction or maybe a tweaking of what you thought you understood. At the end of the day, you still have to remove that to make room for the new. See, meek being the opposite of prideful. The meek understands what you don't understand. A man who is meek of heart understands that he doesn't have the answers. He's not going to have all the answers. You may have some of the answers because you have some information, but you're never going to have all of the answers. That's the way I wanted to put that. You're never going to have all of the answers. You know? A man who is meek of heart, when somebody says, man, let me tell you my views on this, he can sit and listen. Because you don't know until he says it. If somebody says, man, I got a different view on this. Oh, really? What is it? I mean, you can't just dismiss it and go, oh, boy, we're fixing to hear some top level BS here because I've already got all that answer. We've got to listen to him and see. Now, 9 times out of 10, yeah, somebody's gonna throw some nonsense about something at you. And that's fine. You know, if you're holding to the truth, you're not threatened by somebody spewing out a bunch of illiterate nonsense. But you have to listen to it. Let's see what this person's got to say. And if it sounds like there may be some merit to it, you don't just accept it right off the bat. You just take it into consideration and start weighing it against other things. You see, truth, as you gather it up, wisdom, understanding, it will help you. Wisdom and understanding on other topics, when you get those things gathered in your crate, when you have something and you're looking at it, decide, is this true? Is this a nugget of wisdom and understanding, or is it something deceitful and misleading? Well, when you have these other things that you have tried and true and time again, they have stood up. So you're pretty confident that those things are correct. When you have this new information, if it runs in contradiction to these things, have a long track record of being correct and godly, then you can, we got to be careful with this one. This looks deceptive. It's run counter to something that has some information, wisdom that I have that has a long track record of holding up. This new information looking sketchy. Again, a prideful bad because he could never be wrong in his mind, cannot do any of these things. He has his crate and he's put the lid on it. He's not going to take anything out. So as a result, anything you throw at him just bounces off the lid. He's not going to consider it because that would entail being wrong. And that's more important to him than seeking wisdom and understanding. Man who seeks wisdom and understanding, he finds that like gold, like a treasure. He doesn't sit here and go, oh my gosh, that means this piece of information I've been carrying around in my crate is incorrect or incomplete. Oh my gosh. No, a man who seeks wisdom and understanding is like excited. Man, I've got some answers here, because I look back over here and my idea on this was incomplete before. So I just kind of had to put some filler around that to try to make, just fill it in. But it's just like a holding place, I get this picture of like putting some mortar around something, but there actually needs to be something solid in there. You can scrape that mortar out now because now you have the complete picture instead of an incomplete picture. To have meekness of heart is to be able to do that. To say, hey, I can take in new wisdom and understanding. Again, this is why it's written. A rebuke from a wise man isn't something to be offended over. Something to be excited over. You get some new information. If a wise man corrects you on something, don't be offended. Be grateful. Because now you've got new information. Now you have a more... And once you have that nugget of wisdom, no one can take that away from you. It is locked up. Now you've got it. They can berate you. They can bombard you with a bunch of BS. They can try to just flood you with lies. That's because they can't take it away from you. You have it now. They can't steal it. They would like to. They would if they could. They just can't do it. Once you've got that, you got it. It's like a treasure. You can hoard that up all you want. You can hoard that up all you want to. Now, this also ties in. This is why I say you've got to have things like the Bible. You've got to have the whole complete. You've got to be studying the whole complete picture. We know, look, our spiritual walk here, we're constantly, as believers, I always say Christianity, through Jesus Christ, we're fulfilling God's original plan for us from the beginning of the creation, which is to constantly spiritually mature so that we're ready for the life to come. And one of the key elements in that is that we're always looking at ourselves and analyzing things that we do. You know, our sin. Why do we commit the sins we do? What are we lacking in? We're trying to spiritually cultivate ourselves. You see how that ties in to the wisdom and understanding. We're going through and saying, okay, yeah, no, the reality is, you know, I'm doing this because of this. And if I want to correct that, I need to correct my way of thinking. I need to set my mind on the Lord in this aspect instead of constantly being distracted by the world, whatever the case may be. It's akin to gathering that wisdom. We're looking at ourselves and going, okay, well, this is a part of my sinful nature that I'm overcoming. And as I whittle that away, I'm removing those parts out of myself, out of my crate, as it were, and replacing it with the spiritual. You see how it's related to what we're talking about? We're constantly removing that stuff. I always like to think of it as our walk in faith, as we're examining ourselves and looking at ourselves. This is judgment. It's just spread out over our lifetimes. But it is akin to what biblical judgment, when you read about the last day and every man stands before judgment. We're just spreading it out so that we can work through it at a much easier pace versus all at once. You see, the prideful man who goes through his life not doing that, who goes through his life never doing that, he will, in judgment, have to stand, and all of that is stripped away, and he sees himself for who he is. He sees his sin for what it is. He sees all of his justifications are stripped away. He sees himself for what it is, and it's going to be a very difficult, hard, just a soul-crushing thing to go through to realize that you went through your whole life thinking you had the answers, and to have to face the reality without excuse that you were just an idiot. You're just a fool. That whole time you went around bragging and you were a fool. You wasted the time. You don't get it back. See, reason we don't have to worry about judgment is because we're doing it now. You know, when the judgment comes, we've already done it. God isn't going to make us do it again. We spent our whole life basically going through judgment, examining ourselves, looking at ourselves for what we are, why we do the things we do, who we are, what our role is, what God has given us to do, our relationship with God. This is judgment. It's hard. Yes, it's a lot of work, but trust me, it's better than not doing it and then going through it all at once. I can't imagine how difficult that would be. It's a lot easier, by God's grace through Jesus Christ, to go through the process over the span of our lifetimes so that we have it out of the way versus going through it all at one time. Everything stripped away, all of your BS, all of your pride falling away, and that's all you had. You just had your pumped up view of yourself, your arrogance, your pride, and that's it. That's how you defined yourself of who you were. And then, boom, before the Lord, it's all stripped away. It's all gone, and you're left with nothing. That's going to be a tough road to hoe. I wouldn't envy the man. You know, remember that. You're going through the struggles, and you're putting in this work, and you get tempted to be discouraged. You look at people going around, and they doing whatever the hell they want to, and you might be tempted. But those people, this is why it's written, don't be envious of them. Don't be jealous of them. Yeah, they kind of just skating through life right now. But what they got coming, having all of that stripped away and all at once, all of this work we're putting in right now, we're spreading it out over our life. That person, they've got to face it all at once. We're going to wrap up on that note. I appreciate you coming by today and listening to the show. I hope you got something out of it, particularly our Christian-specific segment. This is the most, in my mind, this is the most important 30 minutes of whatever I do here for the week. I mean, the rest of it, it's fine. I enjoy it to an extent and what all, but this is the whole reason. I say, if you took away this, then I would just I got other things I got other things I could do. But I hope you got something out of it. Again, I thank y'all for stopping by, and hopefully I'll see you back here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.